We talk a bit about what your organization is doing. One of the things we didn't talk about yet is that you support the Israeli refuseniks. What are refuseniks?
Yes, these are conscientious objectors. These are Israelis that refuse to serve in the Israeli military because they oppose the behavior of the Israeli military regarding the Palestinians. So in different years, we have seen different waves of high school students. They are referred as Shministim. Shministim means senior in high school because that's the year when they finish high school. The next year, they have to go to the army. We have seen waves of this Shministim that are saying, we are not going to serve an army of occupation. Now, that's illegal under Israeli law, and that's why they are conscientious objectors, and they generally go to military jail for a period of time before they get released.
Now, two things. I once saw a few people from Israel, from the Israeli peace movement here in Antwerp, and then there was somebody in the audience, there were many people in the audience from the Jewish community, of course, who drew attention to the fact that everybody who enters the Israeli army is sworn in, but in this swearing in, they also say that they have the right to refuse to do things that are against their consciousness or something like that?
Well, if that were the case, we wouldn't be seeing what we are seeing now, which is attacks that are affecting so many civilians in Gaza. If you are going to be serving anywhere in the occupied territories, anywhere in Hebron, anywhere in East Jerusalem, anywhere around Gaza, there is nothing that you could do but refuse. If you would only be serving in Tel Aviv, or if you would only be serving inside of Israel, I do not know of any directive of the Israeli military that would allow you to serve only inside of Israel, or that would allow you to serve without discriminating against Palestinians.
So they don't have the right to say, okay, I'm a military person, but I only want to serve in that or that context.
That's why there is an army. The army tells you what to do. As a matter of fact, being a conscientious objector lands you in military jail. So if you had the right to refuse, then you wouldn't end up in jail. What we see is that time and time again, they say, we don't want to serve because of these conditions, and they end up in military jail for a period of time. Now, it's not that everyone opposes the existence of an Israeli army or the fact that Israel should defend its own citizens. It's rather that the army is being used to attack and oppress Palestinians. And that is very obvious from anyone that has even gone, if you put Gaza aside, anyone that has gone to the West Bank and has seen non-violent demonstrations in Bilin, in Nilin, in different villages in the West Bank that are being quieted down with tear gas and with rubber bullets by the Israeli army, where people are actually being killed just by protesting non-violently against the Israeli occupation.
Now, in what way do you support those people?
Well, the most important thing to understand from their point of view is that really it's a small number of people vis-a-vis the majority of the Israeli Jews that go to the army. So what they are doing is not just saying, I don't want to do it, so I want to have quote-unquote clean hands. What they are doing is, I am taking a stand, I am making a position. And the most important thing is for other people to hear about that, to know that that is a position that is being taken. So we publicize what they do, what they say. We sometimes ask people to send letters to the Ministry of Defense so that they get released from jail. But the most important thing that they ask, and really our partners in Israel, what they ask from us is, we need help. They say, we, meaning the Israeli Jews inside of Israel that oppose the Israeli occupation, cannot change things by themselves. They need help from the international community, and they say, please help us, please give an echo to our voice, so that people hear and understand that the Israeli occupation is wrong and that we cannot change it ourselves. We need pressure from outside, and that's what we do.
Another thing you do is you have a blog that's called The Only Democracy. Can you tell us something about that?
Yes, we have a number of blogs. The Only Democracy, I'm not sure if the blog is very active at this moment because we are very focused on Gaza right now, but Israel says again and again that it's the only democracy in the Middle East. So it's playing a little bit of fun with that phrase because we see time and again that there are a lot of non-democratic tendencies inside of Israel, but these are not just one people, you know, saying something, or even the head of the Knesset or somebody else making a statement. There are laws that make differentiations between, you know, whether you are Jewish or not Jewish. Inside of Israel, this is codified in law. So the moment that you have differentiation by law, then we actually question, you know, what kind of a democracy Israel is. Israel tries to be a democratic state, but we see time and time again that it's a democracy that favors Israeli Jews over the 20% of citizens that are citizens of the state and are not Jewish.
And the other bloc, what is Muzzle Watch about? What is a Muzzle?
Yeah, Muzzle Watch, again, at this moment we are mostly focused on Gaza, so I recommend that people go to jvp.org, where we have the most relevant information. But Muzzle Watch was formed when we were concerned that people that were criticizing the behavior of the state of Israel were muzzled, were silenced. So how were they silenced? Maybe you wanted to speak with a journalist in the United States, and the journalist wouldn't publish the article because they were concerned, again, that they would be accused of being anti-Semitic, even though there was nothing anti-Semitic about what they were saying. Or there are different ways in which you wanted to express your opposition to what was happening, and you found that there was a silencing of your opinion. I believe that that is happening generally less and less, except on campuses. We still see on campuses today that Palestinian students and even professors in campuses in the United States that take position in favor of Palestine find themselves in the defensive, find themselves, sometimes people do not get tenure in academia, or groups like Students for Justice in Palestine in different campuses find themselves being under attack just because they are taking political views that are not anti-Semitic at all. They are complaining about the behavior of the state of Israel. So that's muzzling when that happens, and you get penalized for that.
So there is something that's called the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. Could you tell me something about them?
Yes, that is the lobby group, the pro-Israel lobby group in the United States that goes to Congress and tries to influence legislation, also in the executive, in the president, of course, tries to influence the behavior of the American government so that it favors Israel. Now, the U.S. in general has a position that is extremely favorable to Israel. As your listeners may know, the United States pays over $3.1 billion of aid to Israel a year. That's a lot of money that is spent in Israeli military equipment, and that is contrary to American laws that say that that money cannot be used contrary to human rights principles. So AIPAC, it's the organization that does this lobbying. Now, sometimes when you hear people talking in the United States, they use the word AIPAC to refer to a much larger phenomenon, which is what we call the Israel lobby, because the Israel lobby is not only AIPAC. AIPAC is a group inside of the lobby, but there are other groups as well. Some of them are connected to the military-industrial complex in the United States. Some of them are connected to Christian Zionists in the United States. So there are different groups in the United States that are pushing the U.S. government to take more of and more of a pro-Israel position that actually does not pay attention to what is happening to the Palestinians. Part of what we say is that we take the opposite position. So AIPAC is usually used almost like as the main group, but as I said, there are a number of groups that do similar work. So when AIPAC had their annual conference in Washington, D.C., either last year or the year prior, we actually had an ad campaign in Washington, D.C., so that both people that were going to the conference, as well as politicians, senators, congresspeople in Washington, D.C., could see voices of Jews saying, AIPAC does not speak for me. AIPAC does not represent me. Because AIPAC, even though it is not a Jewish organization per se, it pretends to defend the right of Israel as a Jewish state and saying that if you do not agree with what we are saying, you are in disagreement with the Jews. And we are saying that that is not the case, time and time again. There are other organizations that we oppose. So, for example, there is an organization called Christians United for Israel. These are the Christian Zionists, and they hold a similar position from their own religious base. So we oppose them as well, and we support the Christians that actually look first and foremost at human rights and look about how their own religious tradition supports human rights. So we work with different churches in those areas to oppose the Israeli occupation and the illegal settlements in the West Bank.
Now, with the war, or whatever you want to call it, being very heavy again last month. I suppose you are doing some heavy campaigning or other actions right now. Can you tell me something about that?
Yeah, so a number of our chapters have engaged in civil disobedience. One of them was in the Office of Friends of the IDF that collects money for the Israeli military, but some have been in other targets. And this gets us again to BDS. We are looking at what corporations are profiting from the Israeli occupation, and we are saying that what we are seeing in Gaza, for example, we go to certain places and we publicly read the names of the people that have been killed and say Kaddish over them, say the Jewish mourner's prayer over them, because we are opposed to the killing of civilians, we are opposed to the killing of children, of course. But what we're saying is that what we are seeing in Gaza now is not a coincidence. We saw a similar attack on Gaza in 2008-2009. We saw it again in 2012. We see it now in 2014. And if we don't change the root causes, unfortunately, we are going to see it again in 2016. This is a cycle that happens every 2 to 3 years. And it happens because there is a blockade in Gaza. People cannot get in and out. There is no economy in Gaza. There is no way for people to get educated or to even rebuild their houses. It happens because there is an Israeli occupation that does not allow Palestinians to live with dignity, that does not allow them human rights. It happens because there are a lot of political prisoners that Israel holds, Palestinian political prisoners. So we are saying we need to stop the bombing. We need to respect the fact that no civilians should be killed. No Israeli civilians should be killed. No Palestinian civilians should be killed. But we are going to be seeing this cycle again and again and again up until we handle the root causes of what is happening, which is not just now Gaza, but it's the military occupation and it's the embargo of the Gaza Strip at this moment.
Mm-hmm. That kind of sums up what your aims are. Are there any actions that you are planning in the coming days?
Indeed. So there are always additional actions that are being planned. Some of them are kept a little bit under wraps simply because they have an element of civil disobedience. But I am aware that the Jewish Voice for Peace chapter in Boston, for example, is going to be conducting a big rally together with other groups in Boston tomorrow evening, to protest the killings in Gaza. So there's a Facebook page for that, and there's a number of people in Boston, of course, that are going to participate. There was a similar protest that happened a week or two ago where there was a die-in where people basically lay down on the ground in front of the State House in Massachusetts, protesting again what is happening in Gaza, protesting the U.S. complicity with what is happening there and the corporate complicity as well.
Now, something else apparently that you have been doing over a few years in cooperation with a group that's called Interfaith Peace Builders. Those are some kind of trips to Israel-Palestine, and I saw one announced for August. But maybe this is a bit of a difficult time. Is this trip going through or has it been cancelled?
I do not know. I cannot speak at this moment for the IFPB, for Interfaith Peace Builders, whether they are continuing the trip or not. I conducted a trip with them last year. I facilitated one of those trips. I believe it is very important to go and see with your own eyes what is happening, if you can afford it, because you will see the real meaning of discrimination and segregation. You will see what it means to have a road for Israelis and a slower road for Palestinians in the West Bank. You will see what the checkpoints look like, and that makes a big difference. For those that cannot go, we actually have lots of materials on our website, and I actually recommend, if people go to our website at this moment, that even at the top of the website, there is a video. I think it's a 4-minute video that's called Gaza Names, that has a number of Jews as well as Palestinians and other important people reading the names of the people that were killed in Gaza and giving some context to that. We have another video called Israel-Palestine 101. You can also access it from the homepage. It's also a very short video, but gives an explanation of what this conflict is from the beginning up until now.
So you have a lot of material for people who can't afford or don't have the time to go on the trip. What kind of people join you on those trips? Are those Jewish people?
Well, the trips are not organized by Jewish Voice for Peace. They're organized by Interfaith Peace Builders, and you have all kinds of people, both Jewish and non-Jewish, that come to the trips and that they want to see more, and all kinds of ages, all kinds of backgrounds, that want to see more what is happening there. At the end of the day, it's a very good educational tool. What we are saying is that those that can go should go, but whether you can go or not, everyone has a work to do in their own community. The task of educating people in your community, of talking about the discrimination, the segregation, talking about the fact that, just to give you a quick example, this is about the West Bank. I am Jewish, and if I were to commit a crime in the West Bank, and a Palestinian were to commit the same crime at the same time, 1 meter removed from me, I would go to a civil court because I am Jewish. The Palestinian would go to a military court and would receive a totally different treatment. This is unconscionable, that you have two people doing exactly the same thing but being treated differently, being forced to ride in different roads, being forced to basically live in different pieces of land because of the way that Israel segregates, being forced to carry different ID cards that explain whether you are Jewish or not. These are things that are unconscionable, and those are the things that are at the basis of this conflict, at the basis of what is happening now. It's very visual now with the killings in Gaza that we oppose, but hopefully a ceasefire will happen and the killings will stop. As I said, they will continue a number of years from now if we do not address their root causes.
Okay, I think that kind of sums it up. Thank you, Sidney Levy, for your time on this Sunday.
Thank you so much.
Have a nice day. Bye.